Today on Maine Calling, Maine's iconic summer camps. Tucked away on wooded lakes and ponds all over Maine, you'll find summer camps where children from all over the world spend weeks learning to swim, paddle, apply first aid, build fires, do crafts, and so much else. In fact, thousands of people are here right now. How many sleepover camps are there in Maine? Well, the most recent count, 145. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we check in on the world of the iconic Maine summer camp. Many of these camps have seen generations of campers. We'll find out how the Maine summer camp industry is doing post-pandemic, how camps stay relevant in today's world, who comes to Maine summer camps, and how that's changing. And we want to hear your reflections on what summer camp meant to you. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Welch and Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to island and coastal Downey's communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. For decades, families have been sending their children to experience life at a Maine summer camp. Today, we're going to hear about the variety of overnight camps in the state, how they've changed or remained the same over the years, and we'll learn what they mean for the state's economy and brand. Joining me, Lucy Norvell, who is Executive Director of Maine Summer Camps, and Matt Pines, co-owner and director of Maine Teen Camp in Porter, and board president of Maine Summer Camps. We invite you to join the conversation. Share your summer camp memories and experiences. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you. To be a child at camp right now on a day like this just seems fantastic. But Lucy, before we talk about sort of the warm fuzzy stuff, let's talk about some numbers. Maine summer camps are a pretty big industry here in the state. What can you tell us about their impact on Maine's economy?
Well, we have a recent study that was just done across the country by the American Camp Association, and it indicates that the overall impact of Maine summer camps is $1 billion. So that's a very big impact on Maine, and a much larger one than we've reported. Historically, it's certainly grown. And I would say that Maine camps are really proud to be one of the heritage industries here in the state. So like lobstering, timber harvesting, fishing, Maine summer camps is considered one of the heritage industries.
I think this is interesting because you testified before the legislature just a couple months ago and said that the value was $500 million. And then this new study came out and doubled that number. What are they accounting for? How do they figure that number out?
Well, the people who did the study were scientists at the University of Michigan. And so, you know, it's not an apples to apples comparison because they were not the same folks who did the previous study, which was actually a regional one that was done in all the New England states. There are, you know, there's labor income, the impacts of employment are huge. You know, we've got about 17,000, a little more than 17,000 estimated workers in the state of Maine. The other impacts have to do with jobs that are in the food service industry, healthcare, administrative support, public administration, retail trade, real estate, transportation. It goes on and on.
The
But the
ripple
other,
effect. Yeah, but
the
go on,
ripple
sorry.
effect. But the other part of it that's really interesting is that there are certainly people coming to Maine from around the state, around the country, and around the world, and they are spending money in Maine. So parents who are coming for visiting day, camps spend a lot of money buying the goods and services that they need. And I'm sure Matt can speak to that. And of course, even camp staff on days off are out there moving the dollar around within the state of Maine.
And Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, Jennifer. Thanks for having us today on this beautiful day in the state of Maine. It's always a beautiful day in the state of Maine when you're at camp. One of the things that I'm not sure is captured in the study that Lucy is referring to, but one of the things I think about all the time is summer camp for so many people who weren't born in Maine is their first Maine experience. And they come to Maine for summers as a kid, and then they come back as adults and they bring their families back to vacation, or they might even own property here in Maine, like a vacation property. They come, they spend, I think, significant amounts of money, maybe trying to recapture a little bit of those golden memories of their youth at summer camp. And I think that is like such a important part for Maine's economy of what summer camps provide, like we're the gateway, we're the first experience, the first taste of Maine. And I mean, I always say, I think it's a bit different if you come here on a beautiful July or August day. You're going to get a different impression of Maine than if you're here in mud season in late March sort of thing. So we're hooking them at exactly the right time.
Well, Matt, let's talk about the variety of summer camps, of overnight camps. We're not talking about day camps today. We're talking about overnight camps. The study that you cited, Lucy, puts the number at 181. I'm not sure how they counted. Another number is 145. In any case, that's a lot of camps around Maine. Matt, tell us about the variety. I mean, we have the iconic, I think people think of the iconic summer camp where kids are paddling a canoe and maybe learning to sail a little sailboat, learning to swim, learning to build a fire, doing crafts. And that happens, but there are many other kinds as well, right?
Yeah. And the wonderful thing about summer camps in Maine is there really is a camp for every kid. There's a camp that's going to be just the right fit for every kid. And so my camp, we're all teenagers. We're 13 to 17 years old, and our programming sort of reflects the age group of our kids. We have a rock music studio, and so it's, you know, kids can record their own music. Other camps are going to be, we have camps here in Maine that are specialized art camps, and they have glass blowing studios and forges and things like this. We have other camps that will have circus arts, and then other camps that have really high level sports training and sports specific training. There's whatever it is that a kid is into, there's something that can sort of hook them and bring them in. But as fascinating as that is, I don't think that's the heart of the camp experience. The heart of the camp experience is coming into a place apart from their parents and starting to build a community of peers and having these wonderful young adult role models. You know, camp counselors sort of range in age from 18 to 25, 30 years old, these wonderful adult role models who help these campers learn how to make connections and build community. And so the variety of camps in what they offer is so diverse and so different for every age, for every socioeconomic status. There's a camp for every interest. There's a camp wherever a kid's coming from. There's a camp that'll fit, but the commonalities are those building of community, creating connection, and teaching those kids those really important life skills that they can hopefully take back into the real world and make their home community a little bit more like their camp community.
Lucy, I'm going to ask you to push back on something if you're able to. I think the reputation of Maine summer camps is that mainly they are for families that have money who live somewhere else, that these are kids from Massachusetts, Connecticut, London, Paris, Saudi Arabia, California, whose families are spending thousands and thousands of dollars to have a give their children a wonderful experience. How true is that?
There certainly are campers here from all of those places, but there are kids going to camps in Maine who are from Maine, from all parts of Maine, and there are kids who are coming from around the region, from other parts of New England and as well. But there are some camps that are exclusively for Maine children, or camps that are really dominated by Mainers. So there's a huge range in terms of where children are coming from, but far more children from Maine are served by Maine summer camps than many people realize.
And we will hear from the director of Camp Susan Curtis in just a minute. Matt, I want to ask you a question, you know, about staying relevant. Many of these camps have been around a long time. You mentioned that you have a rock and roll studio. I'm guessing when your camp was founded, it did not, but maybe it did. How are camps changing to stay relevant, and how are they holding on to traditional values intentionally as well? How are they balancing that?
Yeah, I love this question. And so this is our 40th summer, and rock music's always kind of been part of our DNA, but there's been a camp on this site for over 100 years now. And there's many aspects of every camp experience that are unchanged. And I think part of the magic of camp is that timelessness. It really is, so much of the experience is the same experience that their mums or dads or their grandparents or even their great-grandparents might have had at that camp in previous generations, and doing some of those timeless things, canoeing, campfires, hiking, enjoying the outdoors. That actually, even though Maine, there's over a century of camping tradition in Maine, I'm pretty convinced that the relevance is greater today in 2024 than any point in that prior history, because the things that camps do and the things that camps hold dear and preserve and really expose kids to have largely been lost from much of the broader ecosystem of childhood. You know, kids don't have the opportunities to be outdoors. Kids don't have the opportunities to interact with peers on an unmediated, device-free footing. They don't have the easy access to some things that, you know, might seem sort of mundane to us, but for a kid from inner city Boston, being able to walk down to the waterfront and jump in a canoe with an instructor and go turtle spotting, that's huge. And a lot of kids are not able to access those things in 2024. And so I think like having those as core values for Maine's camps is makes us more relevant in 2024, because I think that those experiences help buffer kids from some of the impacts of the modern, you know, the modern childhood environment, which is, you know, maybe a little too heavily dominated by screens and media and things like that.
Yeah, Matt, I just have to ask you, at your camp, what do kids do with their phones?
On arrival day, they all get locked in a giant safe and they stay there until they leave camp. And, some kids struggle with it on the first day or two. When we survey the kids at the end of the summer and ask them what their favorite aspects of camp are, they usually talk about, you know, the people and the dogs and all that sort of stuff. But one of the things that they absolutely report that they love about camp is the opportunity to be device free. Mm. And they love the fact that not only do they not have a device, neither do their peers. And so everyone's available for a game of cards or a conversation or a game of Foursquare or a walk in the woods. You know, it's really a pretty unique thing, unfortunately.
Mm. We're going to go now to Henry Johnson, who is a historian for Maine Summer Camps. Henry, we talked a little bit, just very briefly a minute ago, about the fact that generations of families have gone to some of these camps. Tell us, when did they really get going? When did Maine become a place, a destination for families to send children for summer camps?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on your show. The main tradition of summer camp started around the turn of the century, probably started with the Luther Gulick camps in the greater Sebago Lake area. And, you know, those are, you know, Camp Wahilo, Camp Tamanis, and several of those camps, you know, existed at the at or near the turn of the century and are still not only wonderful and operational, but are also guided in substantial respects, if not exclusively, by the descendants of those who founded the camps. So, yeah, I think that answers your question directly.
How robust and strong is the summer camp industry today compared to its boom time? Are there as many camps as there were in the 40s and 50s?
What an interesting question, because the camps that seem to be operational today are very strong and very, very robust as a general rule. But I have to tell you, over the years, many camps, old traditional camps, have come and gone and do not exist. An example of that would be for you to travel along the shores of Pleasant Lake in Otisfield and Casco, Maine, where you'll find Camp Arcadia that's existed since 1916, is still there. But other than Camp Arcadia, you won't find camps that have had long histories because many of those properties have either been sold or redesignated. For example, Camp the Barta Camp, which became Tall Timbers, which became Lenark on that property, doesn't exist anymore. It's owned privately back to, I think, some of the original founders or owners of that property. Camp Vernonia, which became Samoset 2, no longer in existence. It's a large parcel that I couldn't really tell last time I visited exactly what's happening in the operations. Camp Mendota, which was an old boys camp on Pleasant Lake, it doesn't exist anymore. The main hoop camp did come into existence, I think, in the 70s and has been successful and operational on that site. My old camp, Camp Powhatan, which went out of business in 1966, ultimately has operated until this summer, and maybe with the exception of COVID, by Seas of Peace. So, you know, I think that many camps have come and gone. Many properties are now utilized for various residential purposes rather than camps. So, you know, there has been a substantial number of camps that have disappeared over the years. The flip side of it is that many, many of the summer camps that are presently in existence, you know, such as the Luther Gulick camps, such as Camp Androscoggin in Wayne, such as Camp Arcadia on Pleasant Lake, have had this rich, detailed, family-based history.
Well, Henry, thank you for joining the conversation. Henry Johnson is historian for Maine Summer Camps. We do need to go to a break, but before we do, I want to ask you, Lucy, as Henry was reading off all of these names of camps, one thing you can't miss is how many of them have what sound like Native American names. And I'm wondering, in today's world, is that an issue that as we learn more about what use of Native American terms can mean for many locations, what is the conversation in the Maine summer camp world like about this? You have these names that, if they have a meaning, it is probably not a meaning that somebody got permission to use back 80 years ago.
That's correct. Actually, we have a wonderful initiative that's been in place for several years now, since March of 2021. We were actually contacted by representatives of the Wabanaki Tribal Nations about cultural appropriation in summer camps. And our board swung into immediate action and had a major training, a very meaningful training with Wabanaki Reach. We have currently operating a very active working group. It's called the Indigenous Neighbors Working Group. And about a year ago, in that work of providing resources for camps and providing them with a lot of educational information, the working group released something called the Indigenous Appropriation Assessment, which is a tool that camps can use. And it's a personal journey for camps to go through on their own to think about how cultural appropriation might be happening in their camps. And thanks to the very hard work of this group of volunteers on the working group, the tool exists. Just this last spring, Maine Summer Camps was part of some wonderful training opportunities at major conferences for camping professionals. So the National ACA conference had several sessions on Indigenous appropriation, and Maine was responsible for one. There were other sessions at the New England Camp Conference and at a big conference called the Tri-State Conference, where those are three conferences that lots of our professionals in Maine attend. So we were happy to be presenting and providing information, and that's kind of how Maine has operated on the national stage. Our professionals are leaders on regional and national levels.
We do need to take a quick break. This is Maine Calling, and we're talking about Maine's sleepover summer camps. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are talking about Maine summer sleepover camps today and why they are such an iconic part of Maine's culture. My guest today, Matt Pines, who is director of Maine Teen Camp and board president of Maine Summer Camps, and Lucy Norvell, also with Maine Summer Camp. She's the executive director. Join the conversation. Did you grow up going to summer camp in Maine? Were you a counselor? Do you live near one? Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to David, who's calling from Weld. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Good morning. Summer camp. I'm an 80-year-old. In the 50s, when I was 8 years old, I went to Camp Trout Lake for 1 year, where I learned how to operate a small boat. I learned how to canoe, and I learned how to row. And then for 4 years, I went to Hidden Valley, which is near the Montville Freedom area, which I think is in another iteration now, different owners. It was started by folks in the ethical culture movement in the early 50s. And I was there for 4 years. And we did my major. Everybody had to pick a major. And my major was canoeing. And we went on canoe trips on some of the big lakes, Moosehead and Moosehead McGuntick and things like that. And then when I was 13, my last year at Maine Summer Camp was called Camp Wanderlust, which was a 7-week canoe trip from Lobster Lake near Moosehead up to Fort Kent. And these experiences were totally formative and made me a lover of the state. And I'm calling, my wife's family actually had a camp, the other kind of camp in Weld, which I'm calling from now. And I have lucky enough to have a sailboat on the coast and sail on the coast of Maine. So it turned me into a maniac.
Yeah, you turned into a maniac. So, David, when you were growing up, you did not grow up in Maine. You came from somewhere.
No, I grew up in New Jersey.
Yeah.
You can tell by my accent, probably. Yeah.
So Maine Summer Camp is what changed your life?
Big time.
Well, thank you so much for calling and sharing that story. I really appreciate it. We're going to move on. We're going to go to Terry Mulks. Terry is director of Camp Susan Curtis. Terry, thank you so much for calling in. And I'm going to do something I don't usually do. I'm going to start my conversation with you with an email that has already come in. This is from Lisa, who is a school social worker. She writes, "Our large elementary school in Central Maine had a wonderful amount of slots for Camp Susan Curtis. School social workers nominated the students who would like to attend a 2-week leadership camp and handle 2 weeks away from home. Some were only in second grade. Many kids embraced and benefited from the whole experience, and many returned each year. The camp is such a wonderful experience for them. 2 weeks of kumbaya, swimming, leading, and just a real Maine camp experience. Not a dry eye on the bus coming and going." Pretty high praise, Terry. Tell us about Camp Susan Curtis.
Well, Camp Susan Curtis is, first off, celebrating 50 years this summer, which we are very excited about. And we are a camp that does exclusively serve Maine children, and those Maine children are facing economic hardship, and they're able to attend camp at zero cost. We fundraise for all of our campers to be able to be here, and we have about 70% of our campers that return year after year. And so this is a real Maine experience for our Maine kids. And camp was started because there weren't, at that time, a lot of Maine kids that were attending summer camps in their home state.
I understand that Camp Susan Curtis has a tradition where at the end of the session, campers are asked to write what camp meant to them. Can you share a few of those comments?
Yeah, absolutely. The kids do thank you letters to our donors who have made their experience possible. And especially this summer, we've really been promoting that it's our 50th. And we just have some wonderful letters from our kids that are saying things like, you've been doing this for 50 years. You've changed the lives of so many children. They talk a lot about those iconic experiences that you were mentioning earlier, things like canoeing and campfires. The difference that sets Camp Susan Curtis apart sometimes is we do those things really intentionally so that kids are leaving with skills that will help them as they go home to their communities and grow and also on into our workforce. So one of the things that's really interesting is any time that you are out and about in Maine, we've served over 20,000 children in the last 50 years. You probably know one of our alumni because they're teachers and nurses and social workers, firefighters, people who are out there in our community every day.
Well, Terry, thank you so much for calling in. Terry Molks, the director of Camp Susan Curtis. Oh boy, do we have a lot of calls and emails. Try to get through a couple of them here. This is an email from Chris. I came to Maine for summer camp for years growing up. As a result, it inspired my career as a park ranger, which I did for 40 years. I'm happy to say that after years of hoping to live in Maine one day, I moved here last September from California. Here to stay. So that's terrific. And then an email here from Melissa. This is Melissa writing from Maine CITE site, Maine's assistive technology program. Please let your listeners know there's a free webinar available for viewing on our website, mainesite.org, entitled What to Look for in a Summer Camp Through a Disability Lens. We provide Maine special needs camp listings, discuss camps specifically designed for campers with disabilities, and discuss some of the necessary accommodations to look for when choosing a camp. So, Melissa, thank you so much. That's mainesite.org, and site is CITE. And I want to turn to you, Lucy, and ask you about that. You know, we see so much happening right now in the Outdoors for All movement, land trusts responding, especially Maine's beaches. We see Popham Beach and Scarborough Beach with new access points for people with disabilities. What kind of things are you seeing Maine summer camps do differently to acknowledge that, you know, children all have different abilities?
Sure. Well, you know, camps in Maine have this 120-year history in some cases of meeting children where they are, right? Meeting the needs of all children. So we have some camps that are part of Maine summer camps that are serving special populations. So an example would be Pine Tree Camp, Camp Papella. Those are camps that are serving some kids with special needs exclusively. I think that as parents are enrolling kids in camp, there's a process that they go through where they talk about their children and they're looking for a camp that's the right thing at the right time. Matt talked about that earlier. So I think that camp professionals have spent a lot of time learning about specifically what today's campers need. And certainly in the world, we are facing a lot of anxiety and depression today. Kids are really, really struggling with both of those things. And so that's a kind of training and extra effort that our camp professionals have gone to learn how to meet people's needs, how to meet children where they are.
Coincidentally, we have Mary in Falmouth calling in. And Mary, you wanted to talk about Pine Tree Camp, correct?
Yes, I did. My daughter, Anna, has attended many years. She's now 35. She started when she was in about seventh grade. And every time I pull up, I cry. Because
oh, wow.
It's such an amazing place. Yeah, and I cry when I leave. The staff is amazing. The programming, the welcoming, it's for children and adults. My daughter, as I said, is 35, hopes to go for many more years in the future. They do have a program for determining your ability to pay. So it is not necessarily restrictive in that way. The staff comes from all over the world in some cases, and wonderful young people. And I can't say enough about this organization. 70 years this year they've been doing this. They do some day programming too, but if you go to pinetreesociety.org, you can learn more.
Oh, Mary, thank you. And we have an email from Elaine agreeing with you, and she says it is a wonderful, magical place. So thank you both for letting us know about Pine Tree Camp here on Maine Calling. We're going to go now to Jessica Decky, who is the director at Tanglewood. Jessica, tell us about Tanglewood.
Sure, and thank you for having us on today. Tanglewood is part of the University of Maine 4-H Camp Network. We've got four camps, Blueberry Cove, Bryant Pond, Greenland Point, and Tanglewood, where I am based throughout the state of Maine. And our goal is to provide positive youth development through meaningful outdoor experiences. And these programs were all originally designed and developed in the similar way of Camp Susan Curtis to serve Maine families and to connect them with Maine's cultural heritage and our natural heritage, which is something that everyone takes a great amount of pride in.
What ages do you serve?
Our overnight programs serve youth starting at age 8, and then we have teen leadership programs that take them all the way up to 17. So a very broad range of young folks getting to grow up attending camp, learning leadership skills, and then eventually becoming staff members and other contributing members of our state.
Wonderful. Before we let you go, what's your favorite part of summer camp?
Oh, gosh. I love seeing the kids playing together. You get kids from all different walks of life, socioeconomic backgrounds, kids who, you know, are very shy, some with anxiety, and seeing how they come together and support each other, seeing each other through their lenses and forming those strong connections and ties. We've got two staff alumni who in residence this week whose kids are in day camp, and they attended camp as girls together from different parts of Maine and had remained friends, worked on staff together, and still do things with their families and now are bringing their children. And so you form these lifelong friendships that are truly transformational, and that's a really powerful thing to witness.
Jessica, thank you so much for calling in. Matt, go ahead.
Hi, Jessica. Thanks. It's good to hear your voice. One of the things Jessica just sort of mentioned, sort of one of my favorite things about camp and most directors who I know, is at camp, there's a bit of time and space for kids. And it feels like they don't always get that time and space to sort of work on those relationships and work on their social skills and work on being spontaneous and playful and fun and joyful, and you know, having the distraction-free environment of camp with peers around and with some, like, these spaces that are just, you know, Henry talked earlier about, like, you know, the long tradition of camps. They were built to facilitate social connection and kids sort of getting together and enjoying each other's company. And that's one of my favorite parts of camp, is just having some time, having, you know, camps are structured environments, they're always supervised, but the kids aren't scheduled for every minute of the day. And I think that that's so important for them, to be able to have some time to themselves to think and to create and collaborate with their peers. It's amazing, like when you get to see them sort of like coalesce as a group and start coming together, and you get to see that change over the course of a couple of weeks. It's absolutely the magic of overnight camp.
Well, I want to say thank you to Jessica Deckey with 4-H Camp and Learning Center at Tanglewood. We are going to take another quick break. Phone number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our topic today, Maine Summer Camp, the iconic sleepover camp, what they mean to those who participate in them. Joining me, Lucy Norville with Maine Summer Camps and Matt Pines with Maine Teen Camp. You can share your comments and questions if you're super quick. We've lots coming in. Send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Tracy Husted, who lives in, Houston. She lives in Maryland and came to Maine from out of state to attend Camp Laurel for many years. Tracy, thanks for calling in. How many summers did you attend camp in Maine, and what was it like?
I attended from, I'll date myself, 1978 to 1982, so five summers. And at the time, I grew up out just outside of New York City in Westchester County, and so there were a number of people who were going up to Laurel from that area, from the tri-state area, Connecticut and New York, New Jersey. So, so I'm not even sure exactly how my parents found it, but probably through some other neighbors, and it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. Yeah.
Well, Tracy, I loved it so much. This is so interesting. I love having the perspective of somebody who doesn't live in Maine and calling in to talk about this, because one of the things we're discussing is how Maine Summer Camp kind of defines Maine's brand for other people. And tell us if that has done that for you and what you think of Maine because you came to summer camp here.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've been back to Maine a number of times. It's kind of my go-to. My family is now, we're lake people. When we think about where we would love to take a vacation, it's almost always, we think like our ideal location would be a lake in Maine. We went a number of years ago, maybe almost 15, a little over 10 years ago, to Belgrade Lakes. Camp Laurel is in Reedfield, like near, it's on Echo Lake. But we went to Belgrade Lakes and rented a house for a week. I have a number of friends from camping time from Camp Laurel that own homes up in Maine now, because it just becomes a place that you always want to go back to, for sure.
I understand so, you're a mom.
And I visited the camp, yeah.
Let me ask you how your camp experience sort of defined how you wanted to be a mom, how you wanted to raise your kids.
It helped me, as kind of an adolescent. It was my adolescent time that I was at, Camp Laurel, really helped me develop my independence. And so it really, I kind of helped to define in some ways how my husband and I raise our kids, to be very independent and be able to go off and figure out things on their own, both socially and also just physically, like, you know, getting around or, you know, being away from us. And the social piece of it was very, very important to my development, and then how we've raised our kids to be kind of, you know, inclusive of everyone and to participate and to, try new things and to be able to kind of feel comfortable wherever you are. So that's, we've tried to pass that on to our kids.
Well, Tracy, thank you so much for taking the time to call in. Tracy Husted lives in Maryland, but spent many childhood summers at Camp Laurel in Maine. Speaking of the Belgrade Lakes, we'll go to Alex, who is calling from the Belgrade Lakes. Hi, Alex, go ahead.
Hey there. I'm the director of Pine Island Camp in Belgrade. We're on an island in Great Pond. And we believe we're the oldest, if not one of a couple of the oldest, continuously running camps in Maine, 1902. And I just wanted to highlight camps like ours that are actually resisting the push of modernity. We talked earlier about, there's a part of the conversation about camps trying to stay relevant. And we actually believe that relevant means, human connection and returning to nature. So our foundation is really about, we don't have electricity or running water, letters only, no phones at all at camp for staff or campers. We have the same activity since 1902, canoeing, rowing, archery, riflery. We live in tents. We do camping trips. We only have one single six-week session. We don't do any two, three, four-week part sessions. And we just, I wanted to highlight camps like ours that are really trying to stick to the fundamental basics, which we think people really crave in the digital age of modernity.
Alex, yeah, that sounds really idyllic, to be honest with you. I so appreciate you calling in and bringing some perspective and broadening what people's idea of camp is here in 2024. Thank you so much. We're going to move on to Mary Ann, who's calling from Green Lake. Hi, Mary Ann. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you?
Great.
I'm loving this show. I was actually raised in Indiana, but summered in Maine. And as in the early 60s, I went to Camp Matarsi, Girl Scout camp. And I am still very good friends with one of the girls who we tent-mated for 2 years. And then in the late 60s, I returned as a camp counselor, right out of high school for 3 years. And I met my husband at Girl Scout camp.
How is that possible?
We'll have to ask him that. But he was a kitchen boy and I was a counselor, and we spent all our time off together, and he taught me how to hike Katahdin, and he was in the Navy, and long story short, we've been married for 54 years now, and we've moved back to Maine, and I can't be happier, but I blame it all on the Girl Scouts. It's just been wonderful.
Well, Mary Ann, I am so appreciative of you calling in, and what a wonderful story. I think it's a movie. I think you need to write a screenplay.
Maybe someday. I'd love to find somebody really cool to star in it,
Lucy, go ahead.
That's a wonderful story. And there are so many people who meet at summer camp and find their life partner at summer camp. And that's certainly that's Matt's story. He can tell his own story. But one thing I'd like to say about Camp Natarsui, and also about one of the 4-H camps that Jessica was talking about earlier, is that both of those camps, as well as Camp Wyonagonic, which is the oldest operating continuously operating girls camp in the country, and Arcadia, Birch Rock Camp, were up at our testing camp for the Junior Maine Guide program last week. And since the mid-30s, MSC has done the Junior Maine Guide program in conjunction with the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. And those candidates take 21 tests and have to pass them in order to become Junior Maine Guides. Many of them do go on to become Maine Guides and Game Wardens and other wonderful professions as a result. But that's a very, very special program that we're running. And the Girl Scouts at Natarsui and several other camps were part of it.
Wow. Mary Ann, thanks so much for calling in. Let's see. We'll go to Bill calling in from Parsonsfield. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
I'm with West End House Camp in Parsonsfield. We've been here since 1908. We're a nonprofit camp. One of the things, I've been here since 1958, been a few years. But one of the things that makes us unique, I think, at the end of the camp, when the kids go home, we have an alumni week. We've got over 160 men come from all over the country, spend the week here, ages 20 to 90, reminiscing, swimming, telling stories that may not be true, and having a lot of fun. So that's something we're looking forward to at the end of the year. And at the end of the week, they do fundraising for us. It's very important for our economy.
Wonderful. Well, Bill, thank you so much, and that sounds so fun. Bill's calling from West End House Camp in Parsons Field. I want to circle back because Lucy said that Matt has a story to tell. So, Matt, what is your personal story from camp? I see a little grin.
I graduated university in Australia in 97 and was going to come and spend one summer working at a camp before I went off and did other things. I fell in love with camp, fell in love with Maine, and then fell in love with my wife. She was my boss my first summer, and this continues to this day. So yeah, my plan was to spend one summer in Maine, and then Maine and summer camp really took hold, and here I am in 2024. So I am extremely grateful for Maine's tradition of summer camping for introducing me to my amazing wife. And a fun story is our son is a camper here for the first year. He's 13 years old, so he's a first year camper with us, and he's having a great time. But he's previously been to two of the camps that have been mentioned here, Hidden Valley Camp. He was a camper there, and he was a camper at Birch Rock Camp as well. So we have a wealth of great options, and I'm just happy he chose us for this summer. So.
That's great, Matt. And, you know, I do think there's a Maine Calling show, and all the people who thought they were coming to Maine for a very limited amount of time, whether it was summer camp or maybe a job for a couple years or something. And here we are 20, 30, 40 years later. So I think that might be a very large percentage of the state coming for a short period of time and then realizing you really don't ever want to leave. I'm going to go to Chris calling from Freeport. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just calling in. I feel like I could be a panelist on the show just because my experience, I had 5 summers as a camper at Pine Island Camp, and then in the mid late 80s, and then 4 summers as a counselor there in the late 90s. And I loved it. The sense of independence. I came out from Indiana, actually. Now 27 odd years later, I've been sending my son for the last 3 years to Pine Island, and I'm actually a counselor there right now. I'm on a day off in Freeport about to spend some money. Also my sister, after a couple of years of me coming out to Maine for camp from Indiana, my sister went to Arcadia too. So I just feel like everything you guys have been talking about is just really resonating with me.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Chris. I'm going to try to squeeze in a call or two more. How about Jay calling from the Bangor YMCA? Hi, Jay. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Great show. Camp Jordan has provided life-changing experiential learning activities for 116 years on Branch Lake in Ellsworth. And as the grants director, I can tell you that impact stories that we hear magnetize grants and donations that help support our camp scholarships so income-eligible families can enjoy camp. I'm going to share one with you right now. A young camper on scholarship from Dover Foxcroft says, I have loved my time at Camp Jordan this summer. All of us got lots of awards at closing campfire for all the classes we got to take, and I think my parents are going to sign me up for another week this summer.
Oh, Jay, thank you so much for calling in. Let's see. We have a minute or so. We'll go to Paul in Brunswick. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm a former camp director of 17 years and also worked at a camp here in Maine as a young boy. But I wanted to highlight the importance of the emotional growth of campers, especially first-time resident overnight campers. And I remember dealing with so many young, homesick little kids and getting them through the first 3 days. And if we get them through the first 3 days, then they typically would make it. But the impact of separation from mom and dad and growing that level of independence that serves them for many years.
Oh, that's wonderful. And Paul, while you were saying the first 3 days, I saw Matt nodding. So that must be universal. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. And I'm going to squeeze in one more email, and I apologize to all of you I was not able to get to. Lois writes, Mainers should be proud of the unique experience of Seeds of Peace, where teens from the Middle East, South Asia, and U.S. come together. They live at a traditional Maine summer camp and do all the usual camp activities, but they also spend time in facilitated small group discussions, learning to listen from those from the, quote, other side. So thank you, everybody who took part in today's program, and especially to our guests for the hour, Matt Pines, board president at Maine Summer Camps and co-owner and director of Maine Teen Camp. Also, Lucy Norvell, the executive director of Maine Summer Camps. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can visit the Maine Calling website to sign up for our weekly newsletter or to listen to past programs. Tomorrow on the program, we are re-airing my earlier conversation with author Sebastian Younger about the idea of an afterlife. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.